Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance in the Crawl Space Studios in Wormtown. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing exceptionally well. Thank you, Tim. It's good to be alive yet another day. How are you?
I'm doing well here in 2020, top of the first, Lance.
Yep.
And these first couple episodes that we're bringing to you here are episodes about the unsolved murder of Sheila Shepherd from Saratoga Springs, New York. And we brought you an intro episode to this case back in October. And so here is two episodes in a row about this case that we filmed on the streets with investigators Chris Callahan and Matt Wilson of the Saratoga Springs Police Department. We were walking the streets with them and going to Sheila's apartment, Sheila's old apartment.
Yep, and this is ultimately a very tragic case. Obviously, Sheila was a young woman. She was 22 years old. It's incredibly bizarre. She was found spread out on her bed, naked. She was tied. She had a kitchen knife, her own kitchen knife, in her stomach, and she was discovered by her uncle after 2 days of concern for her whereabouts and well-being. The official cause of death, though, was ruled asphyxiation, as we find out as we talk to the detectives or the investigators in this case. And the stabbing was post-mortem, which almost gives it a sense of sort of a set-up scenario. And we've been exploring the notion that maybe the person who perpetrated this crime returned later on to maybe take something. I mean, this case has so many layers to it, and it's the only unsolved murder in Saratoga Springs history, and it's been that way for 39 years.
Yeah, and we really start out this episode with some introductory info. What you said there about maybe someone returning to the scene, that doesn't really get into it until the very end, I would say, of this second episode, but that will play into future episodes in this series, no doubt.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself because that felt like one of those, to quote a very cliche term, like an aha moment, and I just couldn't help myself because that really stands out to me, but I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay, so before we get to the episode, I just want to make a couple announcements here. We are doing two live shows in March of 2020 with True Crime Obsessed, Lance. One in Boston on March 20th, 2020, and one in Philadelphia on March 21st, 2020.
Yep, we're going to be spending our St. Patrick's Day weekend with Patrick and Jillian. And March 20th is at Club Royale in Boston, and the 21st is at Underground Arts in Philadelphia, and we are making another push for funds for the Find Maura campaign on GoFundMe. There will be a text-to-donate number that is announced at those shows, so stay tuned for that, and we'll hopefully get a good turnout. Well, of course we'll get a good turnout from these two shows because the wildly successful and passionate, rabid fan base of True Crime Obsessed will follow them to the ends of the earth. And we're just kind of along for the ride.
And Lance, our full catalog of episodes is back on the public feed, so you can binge from the very beginning of Crawl Space. We started this show back in February of 2017, and now every single episode is back there on the public feed for free. You can obviously get ad-free versions on Stitcher Premium, though. So go ahead and binge if you just learned about Crawl Space, or re-binge if you've been with us from the beginning. Okay, everybody, hope you enjoy this series on Sheila Shepherd. And of course, if you have any information, please call the numbers in the show notes. Thank you. This first clip that we wanted to play is a news footage clip from back then in 1980, and it shows where the investigation was from the very first day, which, sad to say, I mean, but kind of obviously, that it wasn't very far.
A woman who lived next door told police that her daughter heard screams about 10:30 last night, but that report has not been further substantiated. Police admit this will be a tough crime to solve.
We don't have any suspects. We're really at a loss for now. We're just doing a lot of footwork and trying to talk to the neighbors and find out what the situation was. Who's seen her last? Who talked to her?
Do you have any reason to believe that this was someone who knew her, though, or this could be a random kind of crime?
We have no reason to believe that statement whatsoever, whether it was a random situation or someone knew her or what. We don't know at this point.
As the body was removed from the house this afternoon, police officials made public more details of the murder. Besides being tied to the bed, Ms. Shepherd had been stabbed and a 5-inch steak knife was found lodged in her stomach. An autopsy will be performed in the morning, and police hope one of the most important unanswered questions in this homicide puzzle will be answered. the time Sheila Shepherd died. Bob Lawson, TV10 Action News, Saratoga Springs.
And then we hop in the car with investigators Callahan and Wilson and head from the police station over to Sheila Shepherd's old apartment. And we mostly talk about the town of Saratoga Springs.
But what an interesting feeling of anticipation as we were heading over there. First of all, to be working with the investigators on the case and just allowing how they allowed us to be there with them, and they were open with their information. And also heading to the scene of a crime was something else.
So I don't know if you can see the place in the corner up there. This is Gaffney's. It's got like some white like Christmas lights outside.
Oh yeah,
that's the main stretch, the main bar hub called Caroline Street. And
okay.
Then this street that we're on now turns into Putnam Street, which has got a bunch of bars on it as well. That's our like I said, it used to be called the Gut, but the hub of the downtown area. There's something like 15 bars in a four block area.
The Gut.
The Gut is what it used to be called down there. And there's one of those old, like, historical markers.
The historical marker says.
Down in front of the one bar that she used to go to quite a bit.
So Broadway splits the city in half. So it's the east side, it's the west side. And the streets kind of run in a one-way direction off of Broadway, at least Broadway or Caroline and Phila, the next two blocks over.
Saratoga got a lot of urban renewal money
mm-hmm.
in the, 70s, yeah. early 70s, too. So downtown is, it's come a long way. And where the hotels are over here in that big parking lot were like row house, like slums back before this. But it's changed a lot, even from those videos where I sent you the old news releases, the stories. You'll see how different it looks from the footage, a little bit they shot downtown.
This used to be a parking lot. Over here was a long building. There used to be a train tracks you go through here back in the 40s and 50s, but it was a bar called The Hub, and it was part of the old train rail station I used to go through here. There was a bar here that she used to go to. I think we interviewed a couple people.
That was one of the ones that may or may not have been one of the last places that she was seen alive walking past that place.
Right here.
It'd be back in the building's gone. They tore the building down, but it'd be a place that she would pass regularly to get back to her apartment.
Right.
So you would take this sidewalk here, where this building's going up. There was another building at the time that was a vocational school. That's where she was going to school.
Oh.
Like a
Worldwide Enterprises. Yeah, it was like a temp, agency type thing where they taught you typing and. All sorts of secretarial type stuff.
Sure.
She was enrolled in. Yeah, 125 right here. Yeah.
And here we are now in front of Sheila Shepherd's old apartment discussing the details of the case. And just to describe the building real quick, because some of this kind of comes out, but it's a large building. I think it's 8 apartments. That would be 4 on top and 4 on the first floor, so 4 on the second. And there are 2 fire escapes, one on each side of the building.
And it's really sort of heart-wrenching to think about Sheila's uncle ascending those steps on the fire escape, working the window open, crawling in, and then, for the most part, having to crawl over Sheila's body, realizing that his niece was dead. And then he has to go outside and prevent the family members, her aunt and her mother, from charging in to find out what's going on.
And the fire escape is where her uncle ends up going up the fire escape when nobody can get in touch with her. She had missed a couple days of school. And like we said, the school was right down here in the corner. That building's no longer there. It was the vocational school she went to. She doesn't show up on Monday. On Tuesday, the teacher sends a couple of students to the apartment here to look for her. They go to the door, no response, but they can hear a radio playing inside the apartment. So then they come back to the school. They tell the teacher, who then gets concerned. She calls Sheila's mother, who then comes to the apartment with her Sheila's sister, Sheila's aunt and uncle. Uncle goes up the fire escape, because they had told him she'll sometimes leave that open mm-hmm. for her brother to come into the house through the fire escape. He goes up the stairs through the window, finds her covered with a bed sheet, ends up pulling the bed sheet back, sees that she's deceased, gag in her mouth, she's tied, says he covers her back up, goes out the front door and comes down the stairs to head off Sheila's mother and aunt before they can come inside the apartment and see her. And then they obviously call the police. Police from there, initial patrolman goes in just to verify that she is in fact deceased, and then it's when the investigators are called to the scene.
Did she live there with her brother?
No, Sheila lived up in the front apartment up here on the right side of the building. She was enrolled in a vocational school that is, the building's no longer here, but it was down on the next intersection at the corner. So she'd be able to walk right down the street to her classes. That Tuesday morning, November 25th, was her second day in a row. She hadn't shown up at school. Teacher was concerned, so she sent a couple of Sheila's friends from class over here to check on her. They went up the main stairs, knocked on the door. There was no response. They heard a radio playing inside the apartment.
And here's a clip from Sheila's teacher at the time.
We made contact with her mother and asked if she had been out of town or whatever. And the mother took it from there, as far as I know. But we were concerned because usually everyone is here every day. One of our people doesn't show up 2 days in a row. That's a pretty good sign that something's wrong.
They came back to class. The one friend said she saw the fire escape, but she's wearing a dress, so she didn't try going up that way. But she goes back to the classroom. She tells the teacher, you know, we don't hear anything, no response. But, you know, we could hear radio playing in there. Matt and I had talked to the teacher a few months back. She said it was odd. She'll never miss class. She was a very good student, very conscientious. She's concerned, so she calls Sheila's mother, who asks her sister, Sheila's aunt, Terry Armstrong, to come over to the house and check on the apartment with her. So Sheila's aunt and uncle show up here along with Sheila's mother. They go to the front door. Same thing, no response. The door is locked. They had known that this, sometimes the window was left open for Sheila's brother, apparently, who would come to visit her at the apartment here. So Sheila's uncle goes up the fire escape. He says the storm window is open, but the inner window is closed. He sees something on the bed. The bed is right at the foot of this window here. So he sees what looks to be sort of person covered with a sheet. He steps through the window, comes in, pulls the sheet back to see that she's obviously deceased. Said he covered her back up, went to the door. He leaves out the door into the main hallway, comes downstairs where he heads off Sheila's mother and aunt, who had started walking upstairs. They heard him scream or gasp or whatever, and he said, you don't want to go inside the apartment. They all come back downstairs, call the police, in which patrolman, first responder, comes to the apartment, sees that she is definitely deceased. That's when investigators are called to the scene. Actually, quite a few people were here. The commissioner, public safety commissioner, or might have been deputy commissioner, the chief of police is here. There's a big to-do at the time, and then the criminal investigators, or the scene's handed over to them, and they take the investigation there, start collecting evidence, obviously do the body removal, and start talking to everyone and anyone in town.
So her brother knew that the window was sometimes left open, and her friends knew that too, that she was at school with?
We don't know. We're not sure if they knew. I think the mother, when she came to the house and had the uncle go up there, I think she actually told the uncle the window may be open because Sheila might leave that window open for my son.
Okay.
He needs to come here and crash or whatever.
Okay.
What kind of crime was going on at the time? I mean, was it common for people to leave their window open and you know, have that be known?
I mean, it's probably not, I don't think people as paranoid as break-ins then as it was, you know, just growing up in the 80s, we left our doors unlocked.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a whole lot of security measures taken for stuff like that, so.
Yeah, I grew up probably about 5 or 6 blocks from here, and I know growing up, my father never locked our front doors, left his keys in the car on the street. So not, you know, definitely not, you know, crime in an area. Definitely not this type of crime. You know, certainly unusual.
What was the, this is a pretty busy street that we're noticing right now.
Church Street.
Has this always been a busy street? Like, known?
It's fairly, this goes into, it's 9N. So this will take you out to like Greenfield, Corinth, out to the neighboring town. This is your one way out.
Oh.
Okay. Well, not your one way out, but it's pretty much the main drag.
Yeah.
Off of Broadway. This one, Van Damme, same. They kind of split. You can see where it kind of merges, and then everyone goes towards the hospital and out of town this way.
Okay. And I hear a train now too. Is that
the train
always running?
Yeah, the train station. If you keep going, when you guys go to West Avenue,
yeah,
you make that left where the restaurant is. Across the street is actually the actual train station there. That runs down to New York City and then up to Montreal.
That was running back then
as well? At that time it was, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like outside the realm of possibility that it's a transient person who capitalized on this?
No.
We
had definitely, that was looked into at the time of, was this just, was this somebody passing through? I'm sure you noticed Saratoga is right off of I-87, major thoroughfare. You know, it's halfway between Saratoga or New York City and Montreal.
Okay.
We're not far from I-90, you know, Albany, Schenectady, Troy. Murder is more common in those areas that are not all within, you know, 30, 35 minutes from here.
So we don't know if she had come home with someone who did this or if someone potentially just went up that
fire
escape.
Exactly, yeah, we have no, couldn't say, you
couldn't
know,
say at this point.
Certainty for sure.
Do you know if the killer used the fire escape?
We don't.
As far as the uncle testifies or tells us that the door was locked into the apartment.
Yeah.
So
the deadbolt
was deadbolt locked from the inside. So we're just assuming that it's either the fire escape or that door. And unless the person had a key to lock the deadbolt on the way out, he's going to probably go out that fire escape.
Right. Okay.
It looks more likely that it's somebody that's known to her, though, where either, like you said, comes back with her that night or she opens the door willingly for that person to then come inside the apartment.
And now we're back in the car heading back towards Saratoga Springs, sort of downtown area where there were a lot of bars. And so Sheila's life was really compacted in about a mile or two of proximity between the downtown area where she went to school and her apartment, and it was all walking distance.
That's like a card and coin shop, but other than that and the pizza place, they're all bars, this whole section here. And which one's 13, right? This Saratoga City Tap and Barrel.
Yep.
That's number 13 Caroline Street.
Yeah.
That used to be a place called Sage's Casa 13, one of the last places that she was seen at on what is thought to be Saturday night. Saturday night is when the time of death was estimated to be, and then she's found on Tuesday morning.
Estimated time of death is Saturday night, and she's found on Tuesday morning.
Yeah, late Saturday night, early Sunday. That was, you know, from the coroner's report at the time, unfortunately, he's no longer alive either, so we can't talk to him about how exact he is on that time.
And here we are on the street talking about the bar scene in Saratoga Springs at the time.
And I know it doesn't sound very relevant right now, but Saratoga Springs is a really quaint little city, and I had never been there before, and I was really, I guess I had a perception that it was a much bigger city. This is a place where it seems like everyone does sort of know everybody or know about other people.
Yeah, and we also kind of touch on some of Sheila's habits at the time.
I think it was Saturday night, but I'm not sure. You know, I'd seen her that weekend.
Yeah.
And
so that's still a source of confusion,
oh,
I
certainly,
guess.
Yeah. And like I said, the people, you know, the source, you know, a lot of these people are like, well, I was out drinking myself, so I can't remember exactly what time it was. I wasn't looking at my watch. There's no text messages back then. There's nothing where you can look at, like, well, what time did you last talk to her?
You think that's an important clue, or you think?
I mean,
really?
the time would be great. I would love to talk to the coroner if you were alive. Say, how sure are you? I mean, I know you're going off of pretty much the same science that we are now. You know, the lividity and the rigor mortis and stuff like that. But you know, if it opens up all sorts of other possibilities if, like, well, okay, say she was killed on Monday,
yeah,
and not, you know, then people who have, you know, alibis or who weren't in town,
right,
and that weekend, like, well, okay, now it could have happened Monday. Do they come back into play?
But from between the difference of either Friday night or Saturday night, there's,
well,
maybe...
Saturday she's she's seen, I want to say, without looking back at the case file, I think it's her mother, right? Sees her on Saturday. She's walking through the...
Congress Laundry, I thought it was.
Yeah, by the grocery store.
Okay.
And she has a, receipt that we have from, like, a Grand Union store.
Oh, okay.
And that was Saturday, like, early afternoon. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's not a matter of whether she was alive on Saturday or not. It was more so people that say they saw her,
yeah,
you know, when did you see her? Did you see her Friday? Did you see her on Saturday?
It was pretty common to see her around?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I said, the one place that we showed you up there, that 13 Caroline Street.
Yeah.
This place used to be called the Golden Grill. Back in those days, the building setup is really still the same,
mm-hmm,
but this was one of her, I'd say, regular spots.
And she would walk from here home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that drive that we just did was like a minute. How long is the walk? Five minutes?
Ten, 15
minutes, depending on how fast you're walking. Not too bad.
Okay.
And that's just before Thanksgiving, so the weather is not going to be terrible, you know, walking through here. It's not like January, February,
right,
you know, walking through downtown. So, definitely you see people out walking still now. If you go out, you know, on November 22nd in Saratoga this year, I'm sure see people walking all throughout the bar districts. And our bars are open till 4 a.m. So it's a steady stream of people from, you know, the ones that want to get out before it gets really bad, right up until... I'm staying right till 4 o'clock, and then, you know, they see him walking home at 4:35 a.m.
It's not uncommon for people to start their night out at midnight.
Yeah. Right?
You know, you'll see them walking from the surrounding area to the downtown area to the bars down here.
Yeah. That Thursday was Thanksgiving, or was it the Thursday?
Would have been coming up.
Coming up.
So this is the weekend, right? The weekend prior to.
Is it? I don't know if you know, like, is that a dead time around here? Do people travel a lot, or people come here?
No, I was telling Tim that definitely for the bars, that's one of our busier, you know, a lot of college kids are coming home.
Yeah.
The first time they're all getting together, and that Wednesday night before Thanksgiving Day, that's one of our busiest nights on Caroline Street there. They'll put extra patrolmen out. There's fights all night long, and just the lines are crazy. Even when it is, like, extra cold, the time here, there'll be lines out the door for a lot of these bars.
Was anyone looked into who might have been from here but out of town at school, who came here for the Thanksgiving break?
You mean that wasn't from here, but then...
Or was from here and came back.
Oh, came back?
Yeah.
I'd have to think specifically about who was talked to, but, I mean, they talked to dozens of people. They talked to someone and say, well, you know, who did you know her to be friends with, or who'd you last see her with? And they go talk to that person, and then give them, you know, yeah, I saw her with this guy, or this person whose name I don't know. There's a lot of that, you know, reading back in the old case reports of, I saw her out with a woman. Well, who was the woman? Like, I don't know, just some woman or some guy. And there was one of the last times that we think she may have been seen alive was that Saturday night. A neighbor on Church Street coming down towards downtown from her apartment sees her in just a side profile of a guy, or like guy from behind in a coat. So he's like, I see her walking with a man. He's like, I think it was a black male. He goes, I couldn't say for sure. I definitely couldn't tell you what he looked like, 'cause I just see, you know, from the side, and I see a profile with a jacket, either muscular guy or a really puffy jacket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't say.
So no accounts from someone seeing her like Friday or Saturday, and you guys like being sure that's a suspicious person or anything like that.
Her being seen that Saturday afternoon, at, you know, walking by the grocery store, I'd say that's the last like real reliable where we could say for sure, like, okay, that's her. I mean,
we could back it up with something. Yeah.
Her mother's.
No security cameras over there. No.
Not that time.
Yeah.
Nobody had anything really.
Yeah.
Significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even. I mean, I started here 10 years ago, and there weren't a lot of cameras then. There was here and there. A lot of these, like on the side here, is like a city camera. They've been put in the last, what, 3-4 years, you know, most of our downtown city-owned cameras anyways.
Mm. Yeah.
This is the age of pay phones and house phones, and that was about it. So if you were out and about, nobody was getting a hold of you until you went home.
The management or owners have accounts of her in this establishment?
Yeah, I mean, they talk to the, it's different owners now,
yeah,
obviously, and the guy who did own it is, has since passed away, but at the time he says, yeah, you know, she comes in here and definitely I know her, you know, she's one of our regulars, but he's like, I'm also not out at whatever time it was on Saturday that people think they may have seen her. But that Saturday night, the more consistent accounts that we're getting are that she's up at the 13 Caroline that night. That's where there's a few different people that say, you know, and the one bartender says, yeah, she was in here, you know, I remember seeing her, and he was pretty confident that it was, you know, Saturday night and not Friday night, which probably is more trustworthy. You think the bartender is going to be more sober than the bar goers, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Here at the beginning of this next clip, Investigator Callahan is talking about Terry, who is Sheila's aunt. Terry, her ex-husband, who found Sheila's body. And then it kind of goes into who else they've interviewed.
We had done a lot of these interviews at the beginning, November, December, January. We first got the case, and then we're not running out of people to interview, but it just, you know, you kind of dwindles when you're now having to go back and reread and try to find somebody like, okay, we haven't talked to this guy, let's go. Right. Track them down. He's still pretty shaken up, you know, 38 years later.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He told me, he goes, you called me last night or yesterday to talk today. And he goes, I couldn't sleep last night because it just brought me back, you know, to that time. And, you know, kind of like a PTSD of, you know, the everyday person isn't used to coming across a dead body, especially someone
your relative.
Yeah. Someone that you know.